Hey, folks, and welcome to the Deconstructor of Fun podcast. I'm your host, Mishka Katkov, and today's guest is Elena Grigorian, a newly appointed CEO of MyGames. I mean, newly. We've recorded this podcast when she was 60 days in, and now she's been at the job for a little over 3 months, so it's a very, very interesting conversation. I think it's interesting because we cover both the personal and the business side of gaming. When it comes to business, we discuss MyGames's tenfold growth over as a company, as a business over the last 7 years. And we also discuss and provide a lot of views on the future, where the industry is heading during the next 2 years. And on the personal side, we discuss topics like what a person should accomplish during their first 100 days as a CEO, as well as things like work-life balance, something that rarely exists with chief executive officers. I really hope you enjoy this podcast. So please check out the below if you're on Spotify, leave some comments, send your thoughts. And I do urge you to check the upcoming annual event, the Istanbul Gaming Summit that we're holding on 7th of March, as well as the invite-only Istanbul Investor Summit for founders and investors on 8th of March, so the following day. If you haven't been to Istanbul Gaming Summit, it's one of the largest gaming events in EMEA. As always, we have top speakers from top companies, and we are improving every year. We're growing every year. We're improving every year. This time around, we're going with almost 1,000 people attending. And the new thing, the one thing that I'm particularly excited about is we're adding more interaction. That is something that people have been asking. So less panels, more interactions. We're going to introduce breakout sessions where you'll be able to have a proper conversation with key professionals and executives. And pre-registration is open. The link is in the description below. So hope to see you at the Istanbul Gaming Summit on 7th of March. And for the founders, investors, and executives, hope to see you on 8th of March at the Istanbul Investor Summit. Without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, Elena Grigorian. Welcome everybody to the Deconstructor of Fun podcast. I'm joined today by a unique guest, Elena Grigorian, CEO of MyGames. Elena, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me. It's a great pleasure for me to talk with you today, guys.
We've been trying to get you on this podcast for quite a while. You are a very busy CEO, newly appointed CEO. It's been 2 months since you've been appointed as a CEO of MyGames, right?
Yes, it's approximately 2 months. In reality, yeah, it's not too long. But nevertheless, you know, taking into account that it's only 2 months, but I have been a part of MyGames for approximately 9 years already, and during which I was engaged in the different operational responsibilities across different levels with the company. And before that, I headed the marketing structure, constructing the largest centralized department in the company. And later on, I coordinated the efforts of our investment arm. So we have a lot of operational responsibilities at that moment as well. And even if my role was called like chief strategy officer, but nevertheless, I did a lot of operational work. That's why it's not something new for me now in the new role of CEO. And definitely our preparation here in MyGames for this transition has been ongoing for nearly a year. So it's pretty okay. So I can confirm that the transition has been, you know, relatively seamless and well prepared. While it wasn't without challenges, of course, but the process was controlled, which is certainly positive aspect.
Yeah, you have quite the career in games. I mean, 20 years industry experience. You were, as you said, 9 years as with MyGames, 9 years working first as a chief marketing officer, and then as a chief strategy officer. And before that, before MyGames, you actually spent 8 years at Disney, where you ran their interactive business in CIA's countries. And your background is quite interesting. So while having these marketing leadership positions, you actually hold a degree in engineering, and kind of like looking, I've looked at your resume; it's quite exhaustive. And looking at it, you could sum up that you're a proven strategic leader in the game industry,
with expertise in marketing, partnerships, and operations. And as the former CEO of MyGames put it, Yelena's exceptional management has exceptional management skills, deep experience in international business, strong strategic vision, creativity, and inspirational leadership. So, that's a very nice former boss you have. So I wanted to ask you is like, how did the transition from chief strategy officer to a current CEO role came about?
Yeah, it seems so that strategic role is slightly different compared with the rather operational CEO role, but taking into account that I'm a part of the company for so many years already, definitely I know a lot about the strategy, our business, our operational things. So I believe that the transition was seamless and smooth enough. And definitely I extend my gratitude to all MyGames team for their, you know, unwavering support for this month. So I believe that our management team is now stronger than ever, and we are progressing together. And over the last 2 months, we have successfully upgraded our strategy, established goals, and concentrated on the crucial issues and the crucial tasks. And we have initiated standard year-end procedures such as budget planning, performance team reviews, and so on. So I can say that everything is progressing pretty well, and transition was pretty successful, I believe.
When you take a role as a CEO, is there maybe this is with presidents, especially presidents of the United States, they have like their first 100 days. Is it when you're taking over as a CEO in a pretty large company, like I think my game's like 1,500 or something employees, many studios and so forth, many projects ongoing. When you take this type of a role, like, is there that sort of a, you know, first 100 days, here's what I want to achieve, or how did you approach taking the role of a CEO?
In reality, it's very interesting because definitely I thought about my first 100 days and what exactly the most important things I need to do and what exactly my focus should be and so on. Definitely depends on the different situations and different structures. But for me personally, my primary goal for these 2 months was definitely my team. So ensuring that our team has all the necessary resources to, you know, effectively do what they definitely best at, transform their passion, creativity, and professionalism into great immersive games. So it was crucial for me. And definitely it involves the establishment of the procedures. Usually it involves in processes, internal cultures, which are able to help them unleash their full potential. And from my perspective, over the past 2 months, we have significant progress on that front and aligning our strategies with the plans of 2024, identifying our key areas of improvement in operations, expanding our hub network, that we create the work environment which help us to help all our teams to work with comfort and joy. And maybe you heard about that this year we successfully opened new hubs in Armenia, in Georgia, in Abu Dhabi, and in Serbia, in addition to the existing headquarters in Amsterdam and office here in Cyprus. So it's fun because 2 months sounds like a lot of days, but in reality, this almost 60 days flew by like a moment. And to keep the pace of our business and our industry, it's so important to be focused. And for me, it was important to remember that I can't do everything at once and do it well. So I decided to take a breath and focus my efforts only what important and urgent, and calmly postpone non-urgent things. Because definitely there are a lot of things to do, and you should concentrate your first efforts on the most urgent things. And again, it's my point. It was so important for me before any big phase in my life, like to be appointed at CEO position. Do not forget to discuss with your family beforehand that they might not see you much, at least for the next 3 months. So we agreed with them this situation, and it was agreed beforehand. It's much easier for me now.
I wanted to talk to you about Heroic Labs. Building a successful game is hard enough without worrying about building your own game tech as well. Heroic Labs provides a comprehensive game stack to help you get your game into market faster and scale beyond the competition. With their Unity game framework Hero, you can cut development and prototyping time in half and quickly add social, economy, and reward systems to grow your game. Satori, the LiveOps platform built specifically for the games industry, lets you run live events, A/B tests, deliver dynamic content to players, and always keep your game growing. Nakama, the industry's leading open source game server, lets you develop locally, providing all social and competitive features for your game, and then seamlessly transition to their Heroic Cloud hosted service and easily scale to meet the largest of audience demands. Find out how to get started at heroiclabs.com.
The games industry is experiencing unprecedented growth, with global revenues projected to reach a staggering $268 billion by 2025. But with more players than ever connecting across platforms and devices, how can your game stand out against the competition? AppsFlyer has created AppsFlyer for Games to help you unlock your players' true LTV by providing a wealth of game measurement solutions, unique industry insights, and proven best practices. Our dedicated hub is packed with innovative products, industry partnerships, and unrivaled expertise to ensure your game brand adapts and thrives. We understand that every game is unique, and AppsFlyer's data-driven insights allow us to cater to your specific needs. We know that in today's evolving landscape, staying ahead of the curve is crucial. Trust in AppsFlyer for Games to guide you through this exciting journey. We have the tools, the knowledge, and the passion to help you succeed in this ever-expanding landscape. Together, we'll conquer new worlds, both real and fantasy, break records, and create gaming experiences that leave a lasting impact. Get in touch with AppsFlyer for Games today and unleash your game's true potential. AppsFlyer for Games, supercharging the gaming landscape.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of things that you have to take into account. Before I jump in, and you mentioned a lot of interesting things, the opening up of hubs, and before we start talking a little bit more about my games, I wanted to kind of ask you a couple of more questions about your role. Like, when, how does the day-to-day changes from you moving from chief strategy officer or even before that chief marketing officer to a CEO position? Like, are you now more in discussion with board, more external focused?
Yeah.
And like, are the days longer? As you said, with this position, moving from CSO to CEO, you had to, you know, prepare your family of like, this is going to be, there's going to be a lot of work and you're not going to see me a while, but I need to, you know, we all need to work as a team so I can focus on get things done in the first, you know, 60, 70, 100 days.
Yes, it was a situation that should definitely be discussed beforehand. And, you know, in my daily routine, I'm someone who put a lot of efforts and find satisfaction in hard work. And it has been always that way. So it's a significant part of my life. So my work and my professional, definitely it's important, very important part of my life, both professionally and personally, because many of my former colleagues, they became my friends. And I like to spend time with them after the main work calls are done. So I wouldn't say my daily routine has changed drastically, but spending time with my family definitely has to take the back seat for the next couple of months. But in the usual daily routine, there is no huge change at the moment.
Got it. And you talked a little bit about, you know, not a little bit. You talked a lot about like working hard. And as I said, it's, we've tried to schedule this many times and I understand like there's a ton of priorities. Like podcasting shouldn't be the priority of a CEO.
Definitely
a new CEO. but like, how does the work life balance happens with a CEO of a large company? Or is it something that there's just no work life balance? It's mainly work. And then there's going to be balance after the role of a CEO when you're a board member and so forth, or an investor, et cetera. It's like, how does, you know, work-life balance is a question that a lot of people usually ask, but not CEOs.
Yeah. Yes, of course, the issue of work-life balance is the difficult one, of course, especially when it comes to the CEO position, but especially then you're doing something you love. And I really love what I do. And I really give myself to the process. So this balance is not always possible. And I'm CEO of the growing gaming company. But at the same time, I'm mother of two, and I'm wife, I'm daughter, I'm sister, and I'm person with my hobbies and interests and so on. So definitely it's challenging, but and I can't give you the magic recipe how to do that. But for my personally, for my, you know, for myself, I do my best to find this balance every day. And for example, I can say that I had never suffered from it, and I have enjoyed my work, my communication with colleagues, with partners. And for 20 years, of course, I have invented habits that allow me to combine pleasant for me and useful for my work at the same time. So for example, I try to learn something new every day. It's a kind of, you know, new habit in my life, but more about what could be used for me, for my work. And because it's always the maximum interest, that's why it's a kind of combination of something interesting for me personally, but at the same time, it's very useful for my work. The same story, for example, with the sports. I do sports. I work in the morning, but at the same time, I think about the upcoming meeting of the same at the same time, and I write down the important things and thoughts and tasks on the dictaphone at the same time. So it's a kind of combination of pleasant thing for my health, but at the same time, very useful part of my day to spend some, you know, minutes, some hours just alone with myself to think about the new day. And of course, I try to make sure that the time I spend with my family is a maximum, has a maximum quality and useful for each of us. And I believe and I know that, that we all appreciate it very much.
Yeah, those are great points. Yeah, it's just something that is not that often discussed with CEOs or anybody in leadership position. That it takes a lot of organization of your life to be in a leadership position, and it's good that you're explaining how you structure your days so that you can get, you know, the things done and spend the time with the family and everything. But as it always happens with these type of roles, is like if somebody needs you in the evening because there's something happening, you have to be on call and you have to say, hey, let's continue tomorrow, and I need to go, I need to figure things out. So it's part of the role. So I guess that's the work-life balance. But yes, let's switch gear and talk a little bit about my games, because I think it's important to understand the size of the company. So I was looking at some data. It's headquartered in Amsterdam, as you said, around 1,500 employees with more than 50 titles in the portfolio and around 15 games in development. The company is mainly known for mobile-first games like War Robots, Hustle Castle, Rush Royale, Left to Survive, Tactical. And you've lately been expanding outside mobile with games like War Robots Frontiers, that's launching on consoles, and Hawked, that is first-person, third-person shooter game that is launching on PCs, kind of like a Fortnite looking a little bit. And also you have, as you mentioned in the beginning, you have an investment arm, MGVC, which is a top strategic investor globally. So a lot of actions, a lot of different studios with you know, 50 titles. That's a lot. Like, I can't even imagine playing 50 games during a week or even a month to keep myself up. So so wanted to kind of zoom out and ask you, as a former chief strategy officer, is like, what would be the SWOT analysis? And for those few who don't know what that means, it's strength, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. Like, what would be the SWOT analysis of my games?
Yes, thank you very much for this question. It's very, you know, interesting to talk about this, you know, very in a very concentrated way about the my games. Talking about the strength, you have already indicated that our key strength definitely it's our great high professional team with different expertises, because we have diversified gaming portfolio, which is number two strength, the second one. But nevertheless, this diversified portfolio help us to collect very different expertise inside of our team. We do games on different platforms, on PC, console, and mobile. At the same time, we have diversified business models inside of our business. We have our own games that are developed inside of the company, At the same time, we have licensing business. Then we license third-party games to be published all around the world in different countries. And number three source of product for us, it's number three business for us, it's the investment arm. It's much one more way to have the product in our lineup. And I believe it's our strength, this huge diversification of our business in very different aspects. Some, you know, different development teams that have their own unique way to go to the success, unique experience to go to the success, wide range of products on different platforms, different business models inside of one company. So it's definitely our strength. Talking about the weaknesses, I can, you know, indicate pretty the same things like wide range of teams and products. At the same time, it can be weaknesses. Then we talk about the united strategy, united objectives. It's so important for us to work together to go the same direction because the team is huge enough. There are a lot of different teams in terms of the production cycles. And we need to work hard to unite everyone in one strategy and to go in the same direction altogether. Sometimes it's not so easy. Talking about the opportunities, and mainly talking about the market and opportunities that we have there, I could say that at the moment, many gaming companies should think not only about their own category in terms of the platform, but should think wider. For example, mobile game developers definitely should think about experience that PC game developers has. And definitely opportunity for us that our experience is so wide in different platforms, development and marketing. So at the moment, for example, when we talk about the mobile marketing, for us, it's much easier to understand how PC marketers involve the gamers into their product. And this experience is very important at the moment for the mobile marketing as well. And it's much more difficult for other gaming companies to acquire this expertise, but we inside of MyGames has already this type of expertise. At the same time, for all these years, we have wide partnership network, and it's important for us, and it's opportunity for us to involve their expertise and their background to help us grow. Talking about threats, and definitely, I believe it's pretty the same threats as for many other gaming companies in the world, as the moving players' time spent into non-gaming apps from gaming one. It's definitely a threat in terms of the further movement and further privacy restrictions. Definitely the threats for us as the developer and publisher of the mobile games mainly. And of course, growing competition on the gaming market in general. Of course, one more threat for all of us. So it's a kind of, you know, concentrated scheme, what's going on with the MyGames in terms of the SWOT analysis.
Yeah, thank you. This is really great. I mean, just when we were talking about the diversified portfolio, business models, and, you know, investments, I was thinking, wow, how do you lead such a diverse group of businesses and products? And then, as you said, the weakness is definitely the challenge of leading such a diverse team, because everybody's target is different. And, you know, as you said, state and the development and so forth. How do you, you must have what is your leadership team like? Cause like, I was just wondering, it's such a diverse set of businesses and so many products in development at the same time. How have you organized the company to, you know, to stay on top of everything that is going on?
Yeah. I believe that at MyGames, our organization is structured in a different way compared with many different gaming companies, because we have 10 in-house development teams, and each team has unique expertise and specialization in the development of diverse games, genres, and platforms. And this setup forms a kind of micro-industry within the company, enabling a constant consultant and collaboration among different teams. And definitely the key of our uniqueness lies in this diversification, not only in the variety of games we create, but also in the skills and focus areas of our employees and teams. And this diversification strategy positions us ahead of the industry curve in many cases, allowing us to test different hypotheses at the same time. And results of these experiments are constantly shared across all the teams, fostering the collaborative environment. So this collective knowledge sharing process enriching the entire MyGames structure and entire MyGames team, ensuring that insights from one genre or platform can be contributed to the success of others with the company. So, of course, it's a huge, it's very important strength for us, our diversification. But, of course, we have a kind of umbrella centralized structure that coordinates the efforts of our 10 development teams to guarantee that all of them going to the same direction. This is important.
Are there any best practices you can share about knowledge sharing? I've been at many companies that have amazing products, and I've always noticed how almost people outside the company have better understanding of the portfolio that the company has than the people who are actually inside the company. And kind of like that sharing of learnings is not as common as you would.
Yes, definitely. I believe that sharing the experience and collaboration all together is inside of the DNA of the company, because we were formed as the communication, as the combination of different teams, of different development teams. So for us, it's so important to share this experiment and share the result of any experiments we have inside of each team. Taking into account the size of the company and diversification of the studios, when we have a kind of internal event, it looks like industrial event for 1,000 people. Because, for example, we have the working groups between all the marketers from all the studios. The same story, we have the working group between all the game designers in different development team that collaborate all together and discuss different topics together and share not only their knowledge, but their metrics at the same time. Because for us, it's much more important to have the united tracking tool that everyone knows the figures of any experiment, know the figures of any products. So it's a kind of community of developers that can share not only their knowledge, but their figures at the same time. And you could look at any marketing campaign, at any studio, at any product, for example, and look at the result of any event that we have inside of our games, and to ask the question, what would happen, what was the result, and so on. So this collaboration between the studios, it's definitely a key, and we are very, very good at it. Very good at it, because we have a huge amount of internal events for different topics just to share the experience.
Hey game devs, are you tired of dealing with complicated payment processes all over the world? Well, Xola's got your back with Xola PayStation. It has a simple, user-friendly interface that makes it easy for players to pay for your games and in-game content however they want. And because the Xola PayStation user interface is adaptive and accessible on smartphones, tablets, and PCs, your players will have a seamless experience no matter their preferred device. Players can save their favorite payment methods for future purchases, and on mobile, even charge purchases directly to their phone carrier bill. On the back end, you can customize your checkout with game-specific integration options like sidebars and iframes, as well as change colors, fonts, and images to make PayStation look and feel like a natural part of your game. Ready to see Xola's PayStation in action? Visit xola.pro/payments-dof or visit the link in this podcast description. This episode is brought to you by Data AI. Yes, they were called App Annie back in the day, but let's not talk about that. Let's talk about how Data AI is the first company to combine consumer and market data with the power of artificial intelligence. And Data AI does this to unlock unique consumer and market insight to accelerate competitive advantages across all digital channels worldwide. What we here at Deconstructor Fun really like is Data AI's Game IQ tool.
It's this fantastic market and competitive intelligence tool for mobile gaming that allows publishers to really get to the feature level of a game without doing a full-on deconstruction first. Using this tool, your team can quickly tie features to performance KPIs, which will help you make difficult roadmap decisions. It's also a great tool to identify hidden growth opportunities as you can analyze games on a scale. As you well know, there are hundreds of thousands of gaming apps in the App Store and thousands of new mobile games released each month. And while we don't want you to stop reading and listening to Deconstructor Fun, the fact is we can't cover it all. With Data AI, and especially their Game IQ tool, you'll be able to efficiently determine what features provide a lift, make roadmap decisions based on accurately modeled expected outcomes, discover how competitors lifted performance through feature releases, benchmark performance against your competitors, focus with confidence on the highest potential genre for a new game release. We here at Deconstructor Fun are huge fans of Data AI, so what are you waiting for? Go to Data AI and try the service for free.
That's great. And do you have some kind of like documentation of the past event, like past things that have been completed in games? Like, is there sort of a, a My Games playbook that people inside My Games can get their hands on? Or is it more sharing of day-to-day, not day-to-day, but like monthly work, for example, like these are the events, these are the things that we tried in our game and this is how it worked? Or is it more like historical?
Of course, we are trying to have the documents like best practice for different experiments. But nevertheless, it's much more important to have the someone inside the team who can answer your questions. That's why it's not only the documents, it's mainly face-to-face communications. Then you could ask the questions and to understand what's going on in real life. Of course, we are trying to find something in the confluence at the beginning. But, you know, we have a kind of the experimental culture inside of the company. Even if you have the document that, for example, this hypothesis was already checked 1 year ago, it doesn't mean that you shouldn't try to do the same today, because everything can be changed. The market changed greatly every year. The competition environment changed greatly, and the marketing chains and partners changed greatly. So try again and again. Maybe one day your experiment could be much more successful than the previous one. So documentation is not the best way to keep this, you know, this drive, this path of experiments again and again.
I think that's a very smart way to put it. I was just talking to a founder maybe a week ago, and we were discussing a certain thing, and they had a proposal of go towards a certain direction. And that founder said, well, this looks like exactly that we had in this app 3 years ago, so let's not go. It feels like going backward versus like, you know, it's like what was then doesn't mean that it's right or wrong. Yeah. It's like give room for people to try, to experiment, to run their tests and move forward from there. So, yeah, appreciate that. I think it's a smart way to go about. Going back to like your portfolio, how many new games do you have in development, and how is it divided between mobile, console, and PC first?
I can share that our development strategy emphasizes the balance between mobile and PC console projects, and we try to keep this balance to have some PC console project in our lineup every year, at the same time to grow our portfolio in mobiles. For example, now we have two PC console products in early access set to launch at the very end of November. It was announced already. This is going to be released rather soon. One more title that we have in our pipeline and we prepare it for the launch next year. It's Robot Frontiers. We have already mentioned this game. So we have two PC console products to be released at the end of this year and next year. And annually, our diverse development team contribute to the creation of approximately 10 mobile games, annually 10 mobile games. Definitely not all of them will be, you know, globally released or even will be successful. Definitely some of them will be closed over the testing process. But nevertheless, we are trying to keep this this scale to have at least 10 games per year at the latest stage of the development.
And the games that you're making, they are not small. Like they are, yeah, I mean, even looking at World of Its Frontline, you know, console game or Hawk, they're pretty big games. So I'm curious in how do you green light these games? Because you have to be quite forward looking. I think the development cycles for these type of games is 2, maybe even 3 years. So so how do you green light them?
Yes, at my games, the green light process for new games before it was started is a multi-phased evaluation by our analytical team. So they're analyzing categories, genres, and overall potential of each product. And this evaluation is a combination of creative, financial, and market consideration. But after that, as soon as everything is quite good during the green light process, we start preparation of MVP. And definitely the most important step for us to have the real metrics on the real audience of our products. So we believe that it's so important to show your product to the audience as early as possible to get the real feedback from the audience, to see the real metrics. Of course, we have some stages of friends and families, studios review, and so on. But nevertheless, which is significantly important for us, to have the real metrics from the audience. Of course, it's slightly different between mobile and PC console. But nevertheless, in case you have the product that can be reviewed by the audience, you definitely should do that as soon as possible. So we're trying to get this feedback and to adopt our further development process based on the result of this feedback and on the result of metrics we can get after that.
And so I think you're describing a strategy that is quite deliberate. So rather than, what I mean by that is you do a lot of analysis beforehand and then move as fast as possible to start getting feedback on what you have built against a research that you have done, rather than doing something and then seeing and then just getting that something out in the market as soon as possible to see, you know, the basic metrics of marketability, the basic metrics of retention, then pivoting left to right. You're kind of deliberate rather than, how would I say, fast to fail type of approach.
Yes, we are trying to combine the best features from one approach and from another. So, and we find a kind of our balanced approach that we use.
Sounds smart. And how about the organization? So a few years ago, naturally, you've divested from Russia. Has the organization changed significantly since you left the country?
In reality, it's much important to see that the main part of our business and our revenue is concentrated outside of Russia for many, many years already. So the main part of our revenue comes from US, UK, France, and Germany as our main revenue countries. And it was during decades already with us. And we continued our international expansion, continued growth of our key marketers, US and Europe. But at the same time, we think about the Asian market as well. So our international expansion due to our products and due to our ambitions in terms of the audience growth, it's much more important for us. Because, for example, again, maybe heard about that during this year, it was important here for us in terms of the VAR robots that finally we obtained the ISBN for VAR robots. To be published in China. So we have always been greatly interested in China market, but there are a number of conditions we need to meet before launching the product there. I believe that you definitely know about them. And currently the door has opened for our key product. So VAR robots will have opportunity to launch and have the local campaigns in China. And we are in the process of preparation of this launch to be released at the very beginning of next year. It's a great step for us. It's a huge change, and we'll see, and definitely we truly believe into the success of the game there. Talking about the structure and the team, I have already mentioned that we opened new hubs across the globe, Abu Dhabi, Serbia, Armenia, Georgia, and all contributing to our missions of fostering a truly worldwide presence for our team. It's really, truly important for us. You know, even before the pandemic, we had the international team and we were quite flexible, and the pandemic accelerated this transition to remote. And this remote mode helped us greatly at this moment.
There's two things, two things that I want to dig into it. So I'm not going to dig into the China. I've seen companies enter. It's one is getting the license. That's a huge battle. And then the second one is the fun of working with a co-publisher on the Chinese market. So, but that's a different podcast. But let's talk about two things that you mentioned. So one is hubs. What is a hub? So opening up new, like what does it mean?
In reality, hub is kind of combination of help that we can organize for our team that live at the territory. It's not only the working spaces. Definitely, it's not only about the office spaces and co-working spaces. It's mainly about our support at the territory, support of our team in terms of the different procedures, in terms of the legalization, in terms of the bank account opening, in terms of the technical support on the territory, in any other support that definitely we try to organize for our teams. That's why it's pretty, you know, a lot of work to open a new hub, because it's not just the legal entity at the territory and legalization, but it's more about the opportunity to support our employees there in many different aspects of their life and professional work.
And with this type of a hub structure, do I understand correctly that though the company is very remote friendly, people can work, let's say I'm living in Serbia and I would be going to the hub, but I would be working on a different project than other people. So I'm kind of like remote, but I'd be going to an office if need be. Does that what the hub means? Or
Yes, definitely. Definitely. It's not necessary to concentrate your efforts on the exact project to be located into Serbia. You definitely will continue to work for the project you started for. But in case you need any help in terms of the technical support, in terms of the healthcare, or in terms of the legalization of the territory, or to spend some time together with your colleagues, you can be inside of office spaces and spend some time in the co-working spaces in case it's useful for you. Definitely, the structure is pretty the same, but if you live at the territory of our hub, it's much more convenient for you to be a part.
That's a very interesting setup. I don't think I've heard quite this type of approach, but mm-hmm. it definitely makes your workforce quite flexible, because it's not like tied to a studio that has one or two physical locations, but it's more like we provide all the how would I say, like on-site services that comes with, you know, everything from day-to-day life to hanging out with people that you work with in these different locations. But nevertheless, you don't have to be in Armenia to work on a project that is being done in Armenia. You're working on a project that is done at multiple different hubs, as well as remote employees.
Definitely. Yeah, this is the case. This is the case. You're right.
Interesting. And have you, is this hub a new type of approach? Has this been before? Because if I understand correctly, like majority of your employees are remote. So they're working on project, not in the same location.
Yes, in reality. And definitely we started to do it even before the pandemic, but during the pandemic, it's definitely this process was accelerated, this transition to the remote work, and we built the solid infrastructure that allows the team to work remotely. So we moved to remote work during the pandemic and established the principles of remote work in 2020. And we realized the efficiency of this work for us. And we successfully launched our hit game, Rush Royale, because remarkably that entire development team worked remotely on this project. And the game is one of our biggest success now. It's collecting 63 million installs, but the game was done on the remote regime already. And after the pandemic, the decision was made to stay in the remote mode of work permanently, as we saw good results produced by new project teams and gathering feedback from the employees on what best for them. And this year, we decided to build this network of hubs to enable our colleagues to meet and work together on some projects they need. And of course, speaking about the operational team, it's very important to organize a team that helps to support this transition. This is the joint efforts of several teams, HR, IT, legal, finance, communications, and many others. And of course, to be successful during the remote work and remote mode, it's constant communication is a key. And we understand that. So to ensure that everyone is informed about the progress, any project, the challenges we face, the benefits we receive. So everything is communicated constantly on different levels. We have a lot of internal events to support this communication flexibility and transparency. So it's important to guarantee this efficient effect, this effect at the end of the day, having the almost 100% remote employees.
That's super interesting. And so you talked about expansions towards China and getting the license and you know, being excited about what the future brings there. Huge market. I mean, it's a gigantic market. But what are some of the other geographic areas that you see as potential for new games? And overall, like, how do you find those new areas? Like, what makes you focus on certain geographic areas?
Well, you know, at the moment, of course, as I already mentioned, the main part of our revenue comes from the very traditional territories like US and Europe. And of course, this is one of the biggest point for us in terms of the stability of our business. And of course, we concentrate our efforts at these territories, then they think about new product, about new marketing campaigns, about partnership, and so on. But definitely, when we think about the growth points for us in terms of the territory expansion, we think not only about US at the moment. We think mainly about the Asian territories, Asian countries, like China. I already indicated that, like South Korea, like Japan. And we know that at the moment, our share of these territories is not so huge. If you look at the total gaming industry in the world, of course, this territory capture half of the gaming revenue in the world. But for us, significantly, the share is significantly smaller. But at the same time, we have products which is pretty successful there. For example, Raw Robots. Japan is number two territory in terms of the revenue stream for Raw Robots. And if you look at the competitive landscape there in China, I'm sorry, in Japan, we understand that potential for Raw Robots is still pretty huge. And we believe that for Raw Robots, it can be the potential territory for further growth. For example, the same story with Rush Royale. South Korea, it's number four territory in terms of the revenue for Rush Royale. But in any case, the share is pretty small. And we believe that South Korea can be the product, can be the territory for Rush Royale for further growth. And tomorrow, we are planning the special local marketing campaigns in South Korea for Rush Royale at the beginning of next year. And we'll see how it will be succeeded. And we will hope for the great result. And in case it is, we will try to increase our local efforts on this territory to grow Rush Royale in South Korea. For example, Japan and South Korea, it's pretty significant markets for tactical. And again, even if it's number two, not in number three territory in terms of the revenue, we still believe the potential is pretty high. That's why for us, Japan, China, and South Korea, it's number one territories in terms of the growth point. And we do a lot of local initiatives on the territories, trying to understand our, you know, full potential. And we'll do definitely some experiments in terms of the local operations, in terms of the partnership on the territories, in terms of the local marketing campaigns. So 2024 will be the year for us to test these new territories in terms of the ambitions. And we'll see. I really hope that next time that we meet, you know, maybe some quarters later, I will give you more details about the exact results we can get at these territories.
Yeah, that's super exciting. I have actually some experience of launching in some key Asian markets, and I don't know if you're approaching it this way, but there's a lot of work that goes into it, not just localization, but and not just culturalization. That I don't think you need that much with robots, but with the customer support and really focusing on the language that is used in the games to make it feel native. They're much more lenient they're much less lenient to mistakes that they see in games compared to Western audiences that are used to bad translations. So that's interesting. But those are tough markets. They're very concentrated. But looking forward to seeing War Robots, which is what, 10 years old game, to succeed.
It's slightly less, but nonetheless, it's pretty close to 10.
Yeah, super impressive how you are running games that are, you know, closing in on a decade of being live on mobile and still finding new markets and new ways to grow them. That is that's truly, you know, marvelous. And I think that's sort of a different mindset that many companies have, because they always focus on the next one and the next one. But you are both growing the old franchise, old game, and building around that franchise with Little Big Robots launched. That was a mobile game. And then you're launching another console game around it. Yeah. So quite impressive. And I can see Rush Royale working in Korea, because I've seen similar games before Rush Royale launched coming from Korea. The design feels quite adapt for that one. All right, last questions before I let you go. And I know you have a very busy schedule. You know, having worked in games for 20 years, having worked internationally and heading one of the, you know, large publishers in gaming, how do you see the industry evolve during the next 2 years? I'm not going to go further than that, but 24, 25, like what are you seeing in the next 2 years?
You know, it's very difficult and very interesting question to talk about, because of course it is much more important to think about our future and what we should do to guarantee our success, because for the whole gaming industry, it's not the easiest time. That's why it's so important to understand what can be adopted and upgraded in our strategy to guarantee our further growth. And definitely, the economic recession in development markets have a significant effect on the gaming industry now. And if you have been working in games for a long time, as for example I do, you know that the gaming industry has always overcome all economic crises smoothly. And it's the first time that during any economic crisis, games is not in the good shape. And my belief is the games has always been the cheapest entertainment, which has always rather won in times of crisis. But everything has changed now, and the answer is simple for me. I believe, because no less attractive but cheaper entertainment appeared on the market. And I'm talking about the short video and video in general. So we all know that downloads of non-gaming applications show impressive growth. And the most part of this growth happens with the music categories, photo and video categories. And same categories are the record holder for the growth rate of user time spent. So both downloads and time spent goes from gaming to the non-gaming apps. Definitely, it's not the highest growth rate, but nevertheless, growth rate for time spent in games is not the highest at the moment. And yes, we are losing downloads due to competition for the user's attention and time spent. At the same time, we are losing our in-app monetization due to lack of value targeting opportunities we used to have for almost a decade. And so I believe that for next 2 years, we should stop praying for the surge payers. It's time to learn how to work with mass non-targeted audience. We should think how to attract it, but what is much more crucial is how to keep it in our games and how to monetize it, because it's much more difficult than to make the game and monetize the players. And maybe enriching the gaming experience, mixing it with the other forms of entertainment products could help. But I believe that if we as an industry have the ambitions to return to the two-digit growth rate path, we need to upgrade our approaches, both in product development and marketing. So it's, you know, all this sounds pretty bleak, but I wouldn't like our listeners to get the impressions of one, you know, hopelessness and what is happening in the gaming industry at the moment. Yes, today it's not the easiest time for us, for gaming companies, but I'm sure that gaming entertainment will be able to rebuild and find its new way. And we are in the epicenter of these changes at the moment, which is taxing, no doubt, but also extremely inspiring, I believe. For me personally and for my games, it's that way.
Yeah, that was an interesting point of learning how to navigate with mass adoption. It's something that actually apps that you said are, you know, winning the time of users are really good at is the mass adoption. They work for everybody, and that's something that we haven't had the need to figure out. But I bet a lot of people should be looking at onboarding of various apps and how they segment you very early on and the different type of users. It's a lot of interesting things that I've personally been looking at. And yes, it's while this is difficult, after this podcast, maybe a few episodes afterwards, we will have Josh Wilson, who is the CEO of SciPlay, talking about how they went through this route of figuring out the new environment and getting to growth after, you know, pushing the brakes in a social casino company. So it's a lot of figuring out, and I bet there's even more figuring out when you have a very diverse portfolio. But once you get there, it's I think it's back on the growth tracks.
Yes. Yeah. Definitely. Thank you.
Well, Elena, thank you so much for jumping in on the podcast. Truly appreciate it. Truly appreciate you being open and, you know, doing a SWOT analysis of my games and everything you're doing, the weaknesses, the strengths, the opportunities, the threats, and your views on the future, as well as how you work remotely. Is there anything you want people to follow, go to My Games page or download your latest games? Like, what would you like our listeners to do?
No, thank you very much for listening to ours. Thank you very much for your questions. And I really believe that everything will be great with games. And I really hope that My Games and Believe Into It will be successful. And I hope that everyone will be, you know, will be with us during our new releases. So in case you play PC console games, Hooked is a fantastic product. So you are welcome to test and to play.
So Hooked, free to play, Steam, get that game. And thank you again for coming, and thank you everybody for listening. So on this point out, catch us on the next episode.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the whole episode. If you like this podcast, please do leave a comment and share the episode. If you want to access the Deconstructor of Fun community with hundreds of senior games folk, go to our website and apply to the Slack group. And if you want to get notified of all the new content we have coming out every week, do subscribe to the weekly Deconstructor of Fun newsletter. Finally, do remember, we love you guys and we appreciate you guys. Catch you next time.